Hey guys, I'm Chris.
And I'm Mike.
And welcome back to this week's No Limits, the Mitch Rapp Podcast. Haven't said that in a while, Mike. How you doing?
It's been a while. I am doing good, but you, my friend, have been doing a little traveling. You sold some Taylor Swift tickets for a profit. You got a lot going on, as always, in the Furman household over there.
Yes, yes. It's always a circus act over here. Yeah, just got back from a two-week trip to the West Coast. It was good. We actually got a pod in and did yes. Our patron book club with Peacock and the Sparrow. I had to cut out a little early because I was currently at a conference, but I was loving the conversation we were having. They were all like kind of on the same page with what we were thinking. Love that it's very, you know, it's a cerebral book, and I feel like that's what it's meant to do. It's meant to like get you thinking, get you talking. Like, you know, you come out of the book and you want to like engage with other people about it, like what went on, you know? Whereas I feel like me and you have like a deep like love for Mitch Rapp, but you know, it's different to juxtapose that book to this book.
That's true.
When you're like coming out of it just as a fresh reader. And apparently she followed us on Instagram.
Yeah.
She followed us on Twitter.
We're getting some love, and that's thanks to Mark.
She wants to get on the pod. Oh, big, big shout out to Mark.
Got a shout out, Mark. Mark got us a signed book by I.S. Berry at a conference down near him in Virginia Beach, and really promoted the podcast, was giving out stickers, was wearing our swag, got his t-shirt. Job well done. We can't ask for a better community of listeners than you guys, the patrons. And like Chris said, we had a blast talking to you. I was glad I was able to stay on another 45 minutes or so.
Yeah, you guys went well off before I
we did
off.
Yeah dude. Good. No, we kept going. We had a lot to say. We even got to get some people's feelings on Capture or Kill, because this is the Mitch Rapp Podcast.
Yes, yes.
What we're talking about is our other feed, No Limits, the Thriller Podcast. We're doing a whole bunch of books over there, including Jack Carr, Chris Howdy, Andrews and Wilson. So much. We just covered The Peacock and the Sparrow by I.S. Berry. Definitely check us out over there for more than just Mitch Rapp, but we know a lot of you guys are here for Mitch Rapp. And so hopefully you enjoyed our take on Capture or Kill, some hot take, quick reactions last week. I think today, Chris, as we cover this book, we are definitely going to keep trying to bring it back to Capture or Kill, because Don Bentley's the whole reason that we are revisiting Extreme Measures Part 2 here tonight.
You mean Pursuit of Honor, right?
Dude, this book would be better as Extreme Measures Part 2, or the second half of Extreme Measures, don't you think?
Yeah, it's, you know, did I ever think we were going to be revisiting, you know, how many pods are we down the road now? 100 plus Mitch Rapp pods, 50 on the No Limits feed.
This is not the book I thought we'd reread.
I think we're up to 50 on the Brad Thor feed. Well, we did revisit one earlier a couple weeks ago, right? When he initially dropped the hint that it was going to take place, his favorite book was Protect and Defend. So
yeah,
that one I was okay with revisiting. Did I ever think we would pick this one to be our second book to revisit?
No.
I thought it'd be Memorial Day, Consent to Kill. I don't know, term limits, you know, like, or actually we already did the term limits revisited. But anyways, yeah, it's weird how the Extreme Measures ended on a cliffhanger.
Right.
It's something that Vince, I think, rarely did. Something that we are way more used to with Brad, with Jack. You know, I feel like he had like arcs, but they weren't as cliffhanger as this. You know, like where you had to tie up like a, you know, essentially this is a two-part story, you know, that you could have just the chase for the terrorists, but then I feel like that's not enough to justify an entire book. So then you have to throw in all this other stuff with Max Johnson,
yeah,
Sidorov, Glenn Adams,
Cuba, something else.
You know, Brad, you know, on the Hill, which I think in our first pod when we mentioned it like that. Oof. I remember you liking his statement on the Hill, if I'm not correct.
I don't know about that. I think we both said, sure, like personally, the merits of the argument we would agree with, but I cannot stand by that I ever said anything positive about how and why it was in this book.
It was a take.
It's jarring. I remember we had a hot take, actually, that was quite the opposite of, this came out of left field, and it makes absolutely no sense in this time and place in this committee. It does not work as a logical argument. There's a lot of logical fallacies being committed that, for no reason, would that argument, which you and I might agree with, you know, personally, some people will agree with, but that's not the point. It does not work in this context to shape the narrative or add to the discourse being had. So I don't know. I gotta take a step back from that, Chris. I don't remember liking this scene at all, and I still don't. And for that being one of Vince's specialties, a hearing, a congressional hearing, you know, Rap on the Hill or Kennedy on the Hill, I wanted to love it. But then that abortion stuff comes out of left field. So
I know, I don't know. This is coming from two pretty, you know, very pro-life people.
Like, right, exactly.
It's kind of funny. It's funny how, like, it just felt weird. I don't know.
Yeah, it felt strange. I still didn't buy it when it happened. I was like, oh no, this is that train wreck of a scene where,
yeah.
And then even worse is, like, Nash high fives him at the end and is like, whoa, where'd that one come from? You really buried her. And I'm like, what? Yeah, and Kennedy gives him the opposition research, and Kennedy, like, nudges him that this would be a good direction to
go. No, Lonsdale. Lonsdale's the one that gives him.
Lonsdale, right.
Other
Lonsdale.
Democratic senator.
Yeah, I had no idea where that came from. So,
yeah, I think there's little things like that where Vince is trying to mesh. You know, he obviously wanted to wrap up Extreme Measures Part 2, you know, like the conclusion of Extreme Measures. But that wasn't enough to flesh out a book. So you had to, like, add in all these other things. Mitch going back and forth. He's going, you know, he's up to New York City. He's down to the farm, or to where he was trained at
Lake
the farm at, yeah, Lake Anna. You know, then back to DC. And then this whole, I don't want to, like, shit on it too much, because I feel like there are individual scenes that are very good, mm-hmm, but the cohesiveness of it is interesting. And I mentioned this quickly before we got on the pod. It's really intriguing. The thing I got the most out of this book is to revisit this after reading Enemy at the Gates.
Yes.
Because you kind of have a new take on everything that involves Mitch and Mike Nash, and, like, how we get from here to Enemy at the Gates. And everyone who said that was, like, out of left field, I would tell them, even though it's not my favorite book, I would tell them to go back and read this book.
Right.
Because everything is there. Right. Everything is there.
And that's, I think, that's helping me make more sense with the decision for Don Bentley to plug in here between this and The Last Man. Because you also see a little bit of, we'll call it the Nash fall apart or downfall, in The Last Man when Kennedy sidelines him. Like, here, mm-hmm, Rap is questioning him. By then, we totally see Kennedy wondering if he can still work at the highest echelons of intelligence gathering.
Oh, yeah. And that's when The Last Man, she starts to doubt him. Right?
She starts to doubt him. She starts pulling in Coleman.
This is part one with Mitch. And then the next one is the rest of them.
Yeah. So I actually think I see more, having reread this book, of an opportunity for Don to explore that dynamic. Because Nash has to play a big role in the next book. We knew there was fallout of Shannon being taken. Just look at the ending line. I'm going to go take care of my family now. And he walks out, and Rap really convinces him, you can't do both these jobs. You got to choose, Mike. And it's so heartfelt that he has to give up a piece of his identity, a large part of his identity, his down the range, in the field kind of work and training. But he has to do that for the kids, for their sake. And we're going to have to get into the whole Rap plan to oust him. But we truly never saw that play out, right? I want to ask you a few questions about what Rap did here to his friend. Was Rap being a good friend? What Rap did to one of his teammates, a guy he's supposed to be, like, a team leader for, a colleague, someone you're supposed to work with? Like, as a colleague, as a friend, as a team leader, as an operator, did Rap do what's best for Nash? And I don't think so. And I don't know if this was being a good friend. The intentions are good. But how he went about it, to go to his wife behind his back, to go to his boss, Kennedy, behind his back, to punch him out, you know, or do that strike, that palm strike to the chest on the side of the highway. just over and over and over again. Maybe they're the right operational calls. Maybe the intentions are amazing, but there has to be some fallout of Nash resenting Mitch for this. And we get glimpses of it. There's like one-line zingers of it. But can you imagine now having a whole book to see how that plays out professionally, how that plays out personally? Or in the next book, is Mike Nash written out of it because he has to go home? He needs that time off. Even if Don doesn't decide to write Mike Nash into this, we just hear he's home with his family. Fantastic. Fantastic. We needed to know that. So, or how he transitions to being more of a pencil pusher, which is what Kennedy wants him to be at the CIA, not read into things, not getting his hands dirty, kind of on that political trajectory. If Don decides to go whole hog into that and we see Nash as a family man recovering from what Rap did to him, great. If you write him out the next story and Don just says he needed time to recover, he wasn't in the field. That's also telling. Yeah. That's telling. Right, exactly. So I think it's really smart to dig into that. We can't ignore the Nash of it all in the next book. And we can't ignore the Nash family in the next book.
Because remind me, Don said one of his favorite characters was Mike Nash, right?
I think I remember hearing something like that, or maybe a compelling character.
I love that we're going to read these two books, having, you know, knowing what is going to take place. It really, and I think at the time when we read Enemy of the Gates, we suggested it would be a good idea to go back and do this, but now we have to do it because of Don. And I don't know if like maybe it's something he wanted to explore to understand why, you know, to get in a mindset for why Kyle went that direction. Mm-hmm. But to address your point about whether Mitch did the right thing.
Yeah.
I think it's both yes and no.
Yeah.
Because you get lines of, you know, this is coming off. How many books are we outside of Consent to Kill? It's
a couple.
Four books. Mm-hmm. So we keep getting battered over the head with the fact that, you know, Mitch, one of the recurring themes of this book is therapy, right? And Mitch is still dealing with the death of his unborn daughter and wife. You know, he's never going to get over that. Well, you know, definitely not over that now. He sees something in Mike that he could never have or that he wanted to have, and he doesn't want him to lose it.
Yeah.
So like I see where he's coming from a side of love. You know, there's some justification there.
Sure.
But then you got to realize that like one of the justifications for doing this is because he thinks that Mike is such like is fragile right now.
He's going to become him.
He thinks he's going to become him, but also he thinks that he obviously whatever happened over Afghanistan, that had its toll on him.
Yeah.
Seeing his secretary and all those people die is definitely going to play a you know, something on him. He has four kids to think about. He's obviously in this broken state for him to be acting the way he's acting.
Yeah.
You really think the best move right now is to push him over the edge by taking his career away from him? Because yeah, you can frame it however you want. Oh, he's getting promotion. He's going to be his boss. You are stripping the man of everything that he had worked up to get. You know, he put in the work as a Marine. He wanted to do more. That's why he went over with Mitch. And I don't buy this whole like Glenn Adams like thing. Like this is like Mitch is like fall in line, like or shit or get off the pot, like take a week. Like
that's the hardest part of it, or maybe the weakest part of it is so much of what you just said about Rapp's decision and reading the tea leaves, if you will, of where Nash must be. Mentally, emotionally, even physically because of his hearing's damage and physically because of some other intel that Stan
we learned that in the very first book that we meet him, Extreme Measures.
Yeah, that he's having trouble at home, you know. And that's a sign of something, right? You know? Well, the part of it all that I don't appreciate or buy is when he wants to go soft on Glenn Adams. And maybe that's the point. Rep needs to see it and realize how dangerous someone like Nash, who's damaged, could be if he's operating. Mm. The whole, we have to give him his, you know, his due process and we can't be snatching American citizens. I don't know if I bought that Nash had gotten to that point yet where he'd be questioning. But again, it highlights the difference between him and Rap. So did you think Nash was, it was weird that he was so Mr. Patriotic, constitutional American, Glenn Adams has to have his rights? kind of guy, or was that right that that was a crack in the system that told Rapp he needed to make some moves?
I thought it was a quick jump, but maybe that's just to highlight the fact that all the events that took place in the last week just broke this man, and yeah. Like he's not himself. So
yeah,
because you know Rapp purposely withholds the fact that not only did Glenn Adams have the guy bug the doctor's office, but right. also Maggie Nash's therapist's yeah. office. And if I feel like if he had known that,
yeah,
would he have thought differently? You know,
well, that goes back to the question of Rapp as a friend, a colleague, and a team leader. Is he doing the right thing, not reading Nash in on those because he has questions about him?
Obviously, we love Mitch Rapp.
Yeah.
But he's not perfect. Ultimately selfish?
Yeah. No, he is, because you have to be. But what is that like when you have someone like a Mike Nash in your life? I feel like Scott Coleman, especially because we know him as the term limit Scott Coleman, you don't even have to question him, right? Like, we know Scott Coleman's background. He's that man in the shadows. He'll do anything. He'll get his hands dirty. So Rapp being selfish is like fine if you're up against someone like a Coleman or operating with someone like a Coleman. But it's so smart to bring in a man like Nash, who's much more identifiable for the reader.
Yeah, and I think that's why both me and you
yeah.
navigated towards
yeah. him. But it's also why he and Rapp can't get along. They like literally cannot be a Scott and Mitch. A Mitch and Mike has to be way different than a relationship with a Scott Coleman or a Mick Reavers or Joe Maslick. Those guys are just muscle. Mike Nash is way more of a human, a citizen, a human, a family man.
So maybe it does make sense that he turned that quickly.
Maybe it does make sense. It was just a little jarring the way it was written so early.
But he's like sulking on the couch with his Baltimore Orioles cap. I don't know. Maybe it was just the way it was all set up. But
and Hurley's even like, you know, don't mumble when you talk to me or whatever, or something like that.
Yeah, Hurley's just an asshole. It's very interesting. Fantastic. This is the second time. I love Hurley. Second time we get Hurley. We get more of the backstory.
Yeah.
Clear, you see the outline of, you know, because the very next book is not The Last Man. It's actually, this is where he jumps to go to American Assassin. So you see that Vince is fleshing out the story. He's almost like he's written it. You know, he's obviously thought about it like a bunch of times with the Pan Am and Maureen, right? What's his the girlfriend's name is changed a couple of times.
Maureen the Dream.
It's
brilliant though. He totally made Nash in Extreme Measures and then brought Rapp into it, which necessitated a Hurley character. You could flesh out Hurley and then you can go back and write Hurley's origin, not his origin, but you know, the earliest beginnings we have with him, as you're giving us the origin of Rapp. We're also essentially getting backstory on this character he just dropped into the universe in the last two books, and then transition to The Last Man, almost the swan song to kind of begin to wrap it all up, and never even have the chance to wrap it up, but really tie up. Like, look at the last three books he did, right? Leading up to The Last Man, you're almost setting the stage to let yourself come to that conclusion, or let yourself write what Kyle would finish as the end of Stan Hurley, and then eventually the end of Mike Nash. It's almost like the things were there, the seeds were scattered, and somebody just needed to see that plan and pick up on it, and Kyle was able to do that. So I'm really happy with, you know, what he does with Stan and the Survivor, and what he does with Mike Nash and Enemy at the Gates, as tough as it was to deal with. Vince set it up to be tough, because Mike and Mitch in this book have a tough relationship.
Yeah.
No, it had to. Enemy of the Gates had to be a hard book to swallow. It had to be.
But it was always there. And I feel like
Vince
had that set up. That was not something that Kyle finished it, but Vince created the idea.
He teed it up. Just listen to this writing. And we could even link it back to Consent to Kill. I mean, just listen to what Rapp is saying here. This might be one of the deepest passages we will ever have for Mitch Rapp. I'd leave this shit in a heartbeat if I could turn back the clock and have Anna back. When you don't have something, Rapp caught himself and added, when you've had something that meant more than anything in the world to you, and it was taken away. It's hard to imagine why anybody would want to do this shit when the price is that high. I'm damaged goods. He still has a shot at a semi-normal life, And that's why he's going to be the face of this thing, not me. And that comes right after a speech about how Mike is going to become him and he can't let that happen to him.
That's essentially, you could have read that in Consent to Kill.
The events of Consent to Kill lead directly to Rapp's decisions that lead Nash off the deep end eventually, that bring in all these moral ambiguities of a friend doing what he thinks is right, but it may not be right because of his own damage and his own history. And all of that started with Consent to Kill, books before Mike Nash was even created.
Right.
Yeah. That's incredible.
That's funny.
It's incredible.
Funny. There's another, I'm trying to find it, but it's almost like a complete foreshadowing of what happens with Mitch and Mike. And it's like, well, were you going to kill me if I did something wrong? And then Mitch flat out looks at him and says, well, if you commit treason, I'll have no problem pulling that trigger.
Yeah.
And it's like,
boom. He did it.
And that's exactly what Mike Nash did.
That's what Mike Nash did.
He didn't pull the trigger, but you know, he got close to doing it.
And he became a traitor in some ways. Maybe not to the country, he would argue. Not quite as bad as I was just following orders, but he would argue, I picked a vision for America, and it didn't align with yours, Mitch. Mm-hmm. It didn't align with what you and Kennedy are doing. And Mike would say, I'm doing what's right for America. Is that because he's so deep in the hole, caught up with the, what's the president's name?
Cook. Yeah, the Cooks.
He's so caught up with Cooks, but it's like this divergent point that it was always coming to based on what we see here in this book. This book really told us what Mike's ending had to be, and we didn't even know it.
Yeah, I have a lot more deeper appreciation for this book, not because of the plot per se, but because of what it actually means to the story and the arc at large, you know, by giving us these various pieces with Nash, giving us these pieces with Hurley, these insight into Mitch as a character, as a person, and then, you know, throw in the final action sequence.
Oh.
And like, you know, these books are good. So on reread, it wasn't as bad as I like scored it. Or at least that's what I was thinking. But you kind of brought up this interesting question. And I'm also comparing it to a lot of the other books that we've read recently.
Yeah.
And I want to say, I don't know, just when I tap back into a Vince Flynn novel, it just hits differently. You know what I mean? Maybe it's because I love it so much. But you pose the question, replace Mitch Rapp, Mike Nash, Kennedy with
Bob, Dick, and Harry.
Bob, Dick, and Sally. Does this book hit that hard? And I would argue that no, because of what everything we've just said up to this point.
Yeah.
Half the reason why we're loving this book on reread, or like we, not loving, but we appreciate this book on reread, is because of the puzzle pieces it adds to the entire series.
Yeah. The long-term arcs.
Mm-hmm.
Since you mentioned it, just to get out of the way, we are going to have a long chat here about the ending sequence as we did the first time we read it. You know, that's the pièce de résistance. That's the culminating factor which makes you think, oh crap, wait, was this a really good book? Because the ending hits so hard. But let's table that ending because that's an amazing sequence. But as a book, you're right. I don't think it holds up as its own novel. You drop it into any other series that you don't care all that much about, it's not going to hit, or you just change the names and try to make this a standalone. It's not going to hit.
It doesn't make sense as a standalone.
It doesn't make sense. And that's why I said Extreme Measures Part 2. This book needed Extreme Measures, and Extreme Measures, in a sense, needed this book. They elevate each other. Same goes for the whole series, seeing what happens to Mike Nash long term, seeing why do we drop the Stan Hurley character into these two books? Oh, wait, American Assassin's coming.
Mm.
You know, every piece needed the other ones.
This is a very interesting book to say as a standalone. Like, you know, most of the other Vince Flynn novels are pretty standalone. Yeah, there's like a little bit of like, I feel like if you pick this up as your first novel, you would be completely lost.
You would be completely lost. And yes, do they give a rundown on the NCTC hit? Sure, we get a recap of it. Did they give you a little background on Barbara Lonsdale and what she did last book? Sure. Did they talk about the Hawk and Dove and the other bars in DC blowing up in this terrorist attack? Sure. But unless you know extreme measures, you really don't fully grasp the importance of those things. And even the Nash family, you know,
yeah,
you can fall in love with them here in this book, but I mean, I want to see them on the compound, you know, right. Anna and Maggie, or Kennedy and Maggie, we don't get to see yet. They talk a lot, you know, they have a lot of little chats. So I feel like there's other things that make this book better. And with, so put it this way, when we first scored this book, I was very harsh. We were both harsh. We gave it a C minus. And we totally were doing that.
We both gave it a C minus?
We both gave it a C minus, dude. And we were both doing that on a bell curve of the Mitrap books. It was all we had it to compare to, because that's all we had read on this podcast.
Yeah.
Now, I'm rereading it again. And parts like the final sequence, the parts like depth of the Nash-Mitch relationship, make me want to put this thing to a solid like B. I think
I would say B minus.
It's a B minus. But if you remove it from this series and just drop it into any other series with different names,
you can even
have the same things going on. It drops right back to a C minus.
It might be even a little bit less than a C minus.
Might be even less. Exactly. But the fact that it's in the Mitrap universe, I want to jump to like a B minus. What does that mean? Is it a good book?
It's an important book.
It's an important book. Yeah, there we go.
Parts of it are good. I'll go that far.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah.
So to get to some of these other parts, these kind of missing links, I did a little experiment. You saw me taking some notes when we logged on. I was trying to figure something out.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to this list of characters, and then I'm going to tell you something. I don't know if it's shocking, but it just makes me wonder what Don's going to do. He could drop all of this, but just listen. Glenn Adams. Gabe Dickerson, Sidorov, George Butler, Catherine Cheval, Art Harris.
Mm.
All characters in this book never mentioned in The Last Man, the book that comes sequentially after.
They're not.
No. Not mentioned once. The French DGSE chief, Catherine Cheval, who gives key intel to Rap. George Butler, MI6 counterterrorism chief.
Those two characters was cool. I liked that whole meeting cool up meet. In the Azores for like every 3 times a month. Like, sign me up.
It's a cool meet. I want to see Rap and other, you know, of the top brass at the CIA doing those things. But they don't come back. So that could be maybe they're just replaced, right? Different people are in their positions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Art Harris, this FBI guy.
Was he in Extreme Measures too, right?
I was going to say, I feel like we've heard of him before. We don't see him moving forward. So it makes me think it was Extreme Measures or maybe somewhere else. And if you are going to have a Nash family connection, Mitch says, what if this was your daughter, Shelley, who was taken at the Lincoln Memorial? So we know Art Harris has a kid. Just if you're going to go into the Nash family dynamics or Tommy Kennedy or Shannon and Rory Nash, maybe we got Shelley Harris somewhere in the mix as a friend.
You want to create this like...
That's a deep cut.
It's like, what is it, a Pet Avengers or like Young Avengers? You want to make like young Rap, like make a series about the kids?
All I'm saying is they exist in the universe.
Yeah, no, very true.
They're out there doing something. This is like a subreddit. You know, there's going to be a whole subreddit dedicated to Shelley Harris, who was mentioned once. And I'm going to be there with a secret handle as the one moderating it and getting people to talk about it.
That's funny. So Doc Lewis is not in The Last Man, but he plays a big role in the next two novels.
Exactly. We go back in time to see Doc Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
But do we get Doc Lewis
ever again?
After Pursuit of Honor ever again?
No, but he definitely had popped up a couple times throughout the series up to that point. That wasn't the first time we met Doc Lewis.
No, he played a key role. And that's another one of those, like, with this book, he was planting seeds. Doc Lewis does come up in The Last Man. I left him off of that little list I just gave because he is around. So he actually, I think, plays a key role in kind of unpacking the Louis Gould stuff.
Right, that's right. That's
and like Rap right. understanding what Louis did and why he did it.
But that's something that Kyle like dropped.
Yeah, and Don can lean into.
Mm. Gabe Dickerson.
Don't think we see him again. He definitely does not come up in Last Man. I don't know if we ever see him again.
He's the one who was doing the surveillance?
No, Gabe Dickerson was the political guy that Kennedy brought in to meet Rapp in the very beginning.
Oh, that's right. That's right. He's like a lobbyist.
Yeah.
Who's the campaign manager that Kyle comes up with? He reminds me of him.
There was one. I forget, but you get the sense that he's like an elder statesman, Stu Garrett. He's as savvy as a Stu Garrett. He can run a campaign. He can get things done in Washington, but he's got the moral compass. He's the elder statesman, you know, of politics.
The interesting one on this list is Sidorov, especially because we kind of get a cliffhanger with him. And it completely was sending me like Damian Losa vibes the entire time.
Yes.
Because, you know, another shady criminal who does Mitch a favor, and Mitch essentially says, you can have, you know, anything from me. And then we finally got the payoff for that in the last, you know, Kyle's last book. But we got a similar setup here with Sidorov and never see him again.
No. And they have this quid pro quo understanding. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Maybe we can help one another. Is there an opportunity for Don there? So that was where I was leading with all this. Out of this list, who do you most want to see Don Bentley run with in the next book?
Interesting.
I think Doc Lewis has to be there.
Yeah. I think Hurley has to be there too.
Hurley has to be there. I think that's a no-brainer, right? That's amazing. Another author getting to write Hurley
and put
words in Hurley's mouth.
Three,
If there's any character where I think you really have to stew over every word he says, every line of dialogue, I think you really have to get Hurley right. Like you have to pour your heart and soul into what Hurley says every time he opens his mouth and get it right. Because Vince, I think I said this as a hot take on our first Pursuit of Honor episode. Vince's best written dialogue, the words that come out of a person's mouth in all of his writings, is Hurley. Not his best character. That's Mitch Rapp. But I think the best dialogue and words that come out of a character's mouth written by Vince Flynn was Stan Hurley.
And especially because you see it in like two different stages of his life. You know, he's still given zingers when he's old. But then when we're first introduced to him in Killshot and American Assassin, he's been throwing zingers his entire life. So.
Yeah. But it's all tough love also.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You could tell he comes from a place of deep, deep love and care for people, but he can't show that. His words kind of hide it, but it is there. And how much he loves Kennedy.
So Max Johnson, they wanted to turn him, right? That was their goal?
They were even saying he can do a lot for us. You know, the tech side of things. Doesn't he like do something with the phones and the phone lines and tracking? Apparently, he's a valuable guy.
Yeah.
Could we see him and Marcus?
We don't see him again, so I don't know.
Let's
start. Play left foot, right foot, left knee, right knee, you know?
Yes. Rap certainly scared the bejesus out of him, but is that a way to get a guy to be loyal to you?
I don't know. Yeah, we get a Marcus mention. I want Marcus in the book because I hated how Kyle sidelined him. That was like my least favorite thing that Kyle did.
I think it's my biggest critique of Kyle's
work. And he just wasn't a character that Kyle liked. Yeah. So Kyle chose not to focus on that. Which I get. That's your author. You're the author. You have the choice.
Sure.
But if I have my biggest gripe, that's definitely it.
Yeah, I agree. All right, since we're going into the deep end here, let me ask you. You want some Shirley back? Do you need Shirley in your life?
I need Shirley the dog, yes.
Yeah, dude. From the third option, Rep got Shirley just to sneak up on, what's his name?
Stansfield. At Stansfield's house, yeah.
Yeah.
It was so funny when he was reminiscing about Shirley, and then he got like pissed off that Shirley wanted to be with Tommy, like a little bit, and then he's like, oh, I guess Tommy deserves it. But that was funny.
Yeah. I wonder when the last mention chronologically is of Shirley. This is probably getting pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Shirley, let's search The Last Man, comes up in The Last Man. I can't remember Kyle saying anything. I don't know.
Yeah, because Kyle's mentioned dogs before. Did Kyle even like say Oh, I had a dog once. Like, how do you search? I was trying to do that. Can you do that in Everand?
So in Everand, yeah, or formerly Scribd app, you can open an ebook. Like in Kindle, you can open an ebook and search.
Let's just say I hate the name Everand. It's
pretty bad.
Kind of weird.
Yeah.
Not that Scribd was any better, but
no. So Shirley is not mentioned in The Last Man.
Interesting.
I'm not going to waste our time and go any further, but she's not mentioned in The Survivor.
So this might be the last time Shirley's mentioned.
It could be. Or Don Bentley could fill in the gap. Oh, no. Do we lose Shirley in the next book? Do we have to see Tommy dealing with that?
We'll ask Don that when we get on the pod.
I'm still on the kid kick. I don't like the idea. These are
good questions to bring up to sort of be like, not like these specifically, but just like we could frame it around like, you know, all right, you chose to do this story now. One, why? Two, what intrigued you most about the events of both of these that, you know, you wanted to play around in this toy box? You know, like, was it some characters that you read that you felt like needed to come back? You know, was it Mike Nash? Like, you know, what was it? Obviously, he had a reason.
Yeah. Well, it's also really telling if you don't do any of that and we're just super fans kind of fishing for something.
This could all be like completely wrong.
Well, it could be you want to go so heavy into the Osama stuff, right?
Sure. And which is probably the case. I'm gonna guess
it probably is the case. You want to lead into Bin Laden, so all of these things have to kind of fizzle out. You just needed a time period to take us to 2011. Mm. And you had
that just happens to fall between these two novels.
Right, exactly. I think that could be a miss. I think, like we were saying, what gives this series its strength is that connective tissue, is that weaving and texturing of the universe. So I think some of these names we mentioned these last few minutes, you've gotta have a few of them mentioned somewhere. Not the deep cuts, not the Art Harris or Gabe Dickerson. Kind of... But you gotta, like you said, Hurley, duh. The Nash family, something about them. Maybe Glenn Adams. I think the biggest stretch would be Glenn Adams, because at the end, Nash was the one who wanted, well, Glenn Adams is still alive.
He's still alive, right? I wanted to ask you that.
I think they're talking in that final scene, not an epilogue, but that final scene, they're talking about what are we going to do with him? They made up a cover story that he ran away to Venezuela, right?
But
that was just a cover for them holding him. Mm-hmm. Hurley still has him in the basement of Lake Anna or you know, locked up somewhere. Who was the one who they said you can have the final decision when we're ready to offer?
He told Nash that. Like, Nash gets to make the decision.
Because Nash lost his guy, his asset who was undercover in the mosque because of Glenn Adams' fuck up. But Nash doesn't want to kill him. And Nash walks away, says, I'm going to go be with my family. Hurley probably just walks in and fucking pops him. That was a cool backstory, how Hurley knew his father.
That was interesting.
He was like Uncle
Stan. To weave that in, like that was genius.
Yeah. That gave Glenn Adams a little depth, and it gave Hurley a bigger reason to be involved. I thought that was cool. Hurley was going to take the shot. Hurley shot him. It's just that Rap deflected it.
Rap deflected it, yeah.
Yeah. So does Rap's plan come true that they can use Glenn Adams as a plant somehow?
Maybe.
I don't know.
So should we get into the best part of this novel?
Yeah, I say we wrap it up with this ending sequence. It's the winner. The Nash family. Dude, the Lincoln Memorial scene hit hard the first time, but I kind of boiled it down in my head to just, oh, that was a really cool thing Rap did to save the day. It's much more than that. It is much more than that. There's a lot going on during this sequence.
Yeah. So we kind of have skirted around this. Before we get into that, what did you think of the wrapping up of Hakeem and Kareem storyline?
It was kind of fun to go back to. It felt a little long again, like it did the first time we read it and reviewed it. You know, they killed one person in one house, moved to the next house, kill the next person, use their house. Killing the hunter and his son, which was kind of interesting. Vince really made you feel, right? He pulled at the heartstrings with that one. I like the different ideologies. Kareem versus Hakeem is kind of like an analogy for a radicalized person and a mainstream person who's rejecting that or seeing through it. I thought there were a lot of cool dynamics going on, but maybe stretched out a little bit. And the coolest part of all that was how Rap uses that. He says, bring Hakeem with us on the op when they have to go storm the mm-hmm. Lincoln Memorial, and it's a hostage situation. And just the excitement of getting Kareem on the phone and letting Hakeem just distract him and like rip into him and tear him a new one. Rap knew that was the only kind of thing that would make Kareem mess up and give sure. him an opportunity to come in. Meanwhile, Slick, Charlie Wicker, takes the shot of Ahmed, the sniper, so they can go up the steps. Dude, I loved how all that came together.
That was sick. Yeah, it felt a little long. Going back, it was like, it's pretty gruesome what Kareem does, like killing the father and the son and the old lady and his wife, or the old man and his wife.
He goes off the reservation, man.
And then, you know, maybe it's just because we've read a couple of these stories recently where we've had villains that have gone down this path of redemption or like path of thinking about what they've done, seeing the light. You know, not that, who am I thinking? Not that Kasim eventually, like Kasim didn't really see the light, but you know, it's like it's a different way of telling the villain story that I feel like we didn't often get in Vince's novels. So that's what was intriguing to me. But yeah, the action at the, and then the fact that Mitch takes out Nash, like doesn't allow him to do it again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That also has to play a role in this whole mess up again.
Oh, big time. He blames Rap for ending his career. He blames Rap for outing him, which let his family be vulnerable. He ultimately has to deal with Rap probably made the right call by taking me out because I would have made missteps. You know, Nash was ready to walk up those steps, turn himself in, and everyone knows now Kareem just gets to kill both of them on the greatest stage with all the media attention. It's what he wanted, the American hero. Rap knows for America, Nash cannot turn himself in and can't die. Probably the right call, but now Nash has to deal with that. I couldn't have even been the father for Shannon. I wasn't the one able to do that. Rap had to go fucking do it. And it's like, how does he feel as a man and as a father? Rap put him in that situation, but he couldn't get himself out of it. He needed Rap to get him out of it. It's just like another fuck you, man.
Yeah. No, it's another nail in the board, you know, like lining up all the things why Mike would eventually turn $5 down the road, you know?
Yeah. And every time Maggie's like, oh, thank you, Mitch, for saving our family, Nash is like, thanks for getting my daughter kidnapped.
Thanks for getting my daughter kidnapped. Yeah, essentially. Yeah. Yeah. So it's your fault.
Thanks for making us a target.
What did you think of Kareem coming unhinged?
It's pretty good. We saw the path of radicalization. I think it was expected.
Yeah.
I think he went really, really far. And I think Vince can also tease it apart because it's like the Hunter thing. Hakeem, Western educated, you know, knows the ways, is maybe more dangerous than a Kareem because he can manipulate us. He would have let the father live and they would have gotten away with the attack. Or they would have gotten away with the escape, I should say.
They would have gotten away longer than they did.
Yeah. He masterminded how they were going to get out of there, how they were going to hide out for a little while and then be free. And so ultimately, the lion of Al-Qaeda, Kareem, would have been propelled to this global jihad. He would have been like probably bigger than Osama bin Laden, some might argue, because of Hakeem. But it was the fact that Kareem went off the deep end and turned on Hakeem and didn't trust him and wouldn't utilize him that shows the terrorists were stuck in their old ways and couldn't modernize.
And he also didn't like the fact that, like you said, the only reason he was successful was because of Hakeem. Kareem would be
nothing without
him. Yeah, sure, he's a good battlefield commander, tactical genius, but in order to execute everything they had done up until that point.
Yeah.
And he was jealous. It was complete jealousy.
Very jealous. Yeah.
Yeah.
Put that together with deep radicalization and it's like game over. but also mm-hmm. you're going to make the missteps that we need you to make. So
yeah, exactly. Which is, you know, one mess up and it just spirals. It just spirals exactly. out of control.
One little thing I liked about Hakeem, Vince wanted to show parts of a redemption.
Yeah, a little
but
bit.
But not full redemption. There's so many lesser writers who might all of a sudden have a character questioning the radicalization, questioning someone as devoted as Kareem. And so they just tip off the FBI and blow the whole thing. Sure. Or so they cut a deal. Hey, give me immunity. But Hakeem never does that. When he's in the airport and he's under and he's using his cover alias, he just wants to leave. He's not going to try to stop Kareem. He's not going to try to save the day. He's not going to do anything good for America. He wasn't going to help us. It was only that he got captured
yeah.
that he was able to help us. So I'm glad it wasn't just Hakeem turned himself in, wanted a deal, and now he's this redeemed figure. He was still a bad dude.
It's more nuanced than that.
Yeah, it's much more nuanced than that, exactly.
Yeah.
It wasn't an easy redemption, and it might not even be a redemption at all.
Yeah.
But he saved the day by letting us take down Kareem.
It's definitely more complex on reread when thinking about it.
It is. It is.
All right. I guess, should we do the scorecard, man?
I'm going to propose no. And
oh, okay. Do we do a scorecard for Pursuit of Honor?
No, we protect and defend.
Protect
no.
and defend? We decided not to.
I think we just need to readjust our initial ratings and kind of maybe start tracking what our new letter A through F score would be or what our new 1 through 10 score would be in the revisited series. The reason I'm going to make this argument is because these are a class of their own. I don't want like a 42 in a Mitch Rapp book out of 50 to be compared to how many other lesser novels also get a 42. You know, I think it's still a cut above if we tried to use the same tool to evaluate them. I don't know how I feel about that.
Interesting. Okay.
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe these should get scorecard. It's just, are we going to start giving away free points just because it's Mitch Rapp and Irene and Scott Coleman and people we love?
You're right. We already gave it a grade. We already gave it a grade. And it's
good different. Guys. Tell me one time you're going to give the good guys less than a 5.
Never.
Honestly. I just don't know if I'd feel right doing the Mitch Rapp series on the scorecard. I don't know.
But I think we did a good job in terms of saying, all right, so we both gave it a C+ or C- the first time around. But that was in the context at the time, us doing a reread, us doing our final ratings, our final, you know, where it fit in the Mitch Rapp saga
yeah.
at the time.
We just came off of Extreme Measures, which we loved, both gave A- to 9 and 9.1. We were about to read American Assassin, which we both gave an A 9.5 to. You squeeze this one in the middle of those, it's not going to look too good. It's not going to look too good. It helps those books in some ways upon deeper reflection, but it's nowhere near as good as those books.
Yeah. I think I would like to move it up at least to a C+.
Yeah.
If not, it's in between that C+, P- range.
Yeah.
It's not quite as bad as I thought. Now being removed, because at the time I hadn't really, besides Brad Thor, I hadn't really like started to delve into like all these different thrillers and like, you know, there's good ones, bad ones, you know, everywhere in between. This still to me is a very good novel, has its weaknesses, have its flaws, still has, you know, the flaws I think outweigh the, you know, the benefits. So I'm comfortable with giving it a C+, B-.
Yeah, I'm right with you. It would be like a 7 out of 10, like a 6.8 out of 10, maybe.
Yeah, it'd be right around a 70.
Yeah, I wouldn't go as harsh as I did the first time around.
What did we give it?
I gave it a 5, and you gave it a 6.9. So
6.9. All right. That's not a C-, so I don't know why I gave it a C-, but yeah.
And a 5 or 50% wouldn't be C-. Wouldn't,
it would be an F.
I wasn't going to go that low on the pod.
Yeah.
I ain't going to do that to my boy Vince.
Yeah, I'd say it's like right around a 70, you know, right? Like a 70 is a good score.
Protect and Defend is better by a margin, not a significant margin, but a decent margin.
I think we were heavy on that because of the books we were coming off of.
Yeah.
We were definitely heavier on that.
Yeah. But like if you and I the first time around gave Protect and Defend a B- and a C+, revisited, we definitely went higher. I think we both said B+ on that.
Yeah.
if that one went up to a B+, this one can't really go much higher.
No, it can't.
Than a B- or a C+.
No.
So, two good books.
Interesting.
That we've revisited here. Both fall towards maybe this one, the bottom of the pack, Protect and Defend, middle of the pack. So, middle of the pack. And I think that's all I want to say. Are we missing out? Are the people missing out on getting the scorecard rundown?
No, I mean, well, first of all, this is running on the Mitrap pod feed. So
no scorecard, yeah.
If you're just checking out for the first time, you're like, what the fuck are these guys talking about a scorecard? Well, if you want to know more about the scorecard, you got to go visit our other two series, because we have installed the scorecard for all the books going forward outside of this series. That would be the No Limits Thriller Pod Fast feed and the No Limits Scott Harvath feed. Yeah, I think we just leave it at that. That's fine. Super excited to cover The Last Man.
Yeah.
Because what did we give The Last Man last time? Give a little tease.
Last Man got an A from the both of us. A 9.8 from me and 9.3 from you. I think there's a little nostalgia built into that, or a little bit of an emotional bump.
Yeah, Vince's last book.
Being the last book. The Swan Song, yeah. But it's a good book in the end.
Are we doing Don a disservice by reading these two books?
I think maybe in that we're going a little too deep, and I think we have to end this pod with, you know, just let Don be Don, just let Nash be Nash.
Yeah.
However he's going to take this story, let's roll with it and take it for what it is.
Sure.
But
he's purposely put it in between, so it's natural for us to go back and he even said go back and revisit these.
So. He chose this time period as the one to insert himself into, and so there are consequences to that. You can't just choose the time period and then ignore what was going on at the time in the series.
I will be more pissed off if he nothing is mentioned from this book.
Completely. Absolutely. There has to be something, but it doesn't have to get in the way of him telling the story he wants to tell. I want to give him that license.
I get that.
Yeah. That's but a tough it, balance though.
It
that's
has a, that's something from Extreme Measures or from Pursuit of Honor has to come up in the next book.
We have to get from where we are at the end of this book. We have to somehow have reason to believe that Mitch is running around unhinged in Afghanistan. And I think Bin Laden might be a good way to get us there. So
because that's what he's doing in The Last Man, right? So
yeah, he's shaking down that one like Afghani army general guy who's playing for both sides, and he's shaking him down hard.
That's how it starts. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I remember we liked The Last Man because he starts running around to all these different embassies because the guy is leaking, is leaking all the information about the CIA.
Joe Rickman.
Yeah. One of the best villains that Vince created.
Because of maybe how Kyle dealt with the aftermath of him. But yes, he's good.
I guess you're right. But.
And we got to believe that a hit's okay.
Do we get Rickman? Do we introduce Rickman now?
Oh, that's very possible.
That's intriguing.
Especially because Rickman was one of those guys on horseback inserted by the CIA.
Yeah, with the Mujahideen.
Very early in the game. Do we get some flashbacks to him and what he was doing over there that maybe that somehow coincides with the Bin Laden op or intel?
If we don't get any reference to Pursuit of Honor, okay, I don't see how you avoid, unless he's going to completely sideline Mike Nash.
It could just be Mike Nash is home with his family, and now Mitch Rapp is going after Bin Laden. Okay. It could be that.
That explains it. Perfect. Okay. But it would be super cool if you have
Rickman
in here, and he's like a good guy. You know, like no hint, you know, like...
He's just a good dude.
You completely... Yeah, that would be cool.
Even if they're just in a meeting sometime and like Rickman says one thing and passes a folder to somebody and done. You don't see him again.
Yeah.
Here's another one. Like Rogue One. You know how Rogue One, their whole story led to that epilogue, which was the clue to destroying the Death Star in A New Hope?
Mm-hmm.
It was like the intel passing the intel off. That scene where Vader comes in Rex's house. Can you imagine if Louis Gould getting the file to take out Mitch Rapp, whoever hired him to take out Mitch Rapp, was because they found out Mitch Rapp was involved in the Bin Laden evidence collection. And so this is somebody wanting to take out Rapp as a revenge for his job hunting down Bin Laden.
Interesting. Yeah, when I was watching Rogue One, I don't know, at some point when some of them started dying, I was like, oh shit.
They're not around.
Everybody's gonna die.
Yep.
Because I remembered back to like the first line of A New Hope. It was like everyone died getting this information. Like
Exactly. And we're like, oh God, this is that.
is that. Yeah. No, that would be interesting too, to pull parts from each, the past and the future, put it together while also trying to make your own story. I think that recipe for success.
Oh my God, what if there's something about Claudia?
Mm.
Because if we're getting Louis Gould, Claudia is his like accomplice and logistics person, the brains of the operation. Do we get to see Claudia in any way putting together a package to help Louis Gould hit rap?
Intriguing.
Dude, if she offers any like opposition research to Louis so that he can have a better chance of assassinating rap, that'd be tough. Well, Louis doesn't know he's going to hit rap. When he opens that package in Last Man, there's not much time
There's not much
between
time.
him taking the job and realizing it's rap and being like, oh shit. He didn't, ah, damn it. He didn't even know it was rap until he was ready to take the shot and got the
Because he gets the
confirmation.
text. He gets the text.
Oh, so never mind. My whole theory's out the
Yeah.
window.
But we could get a line where it's like,
The people who hired him.
yeah, exactly. We can hire Louis Gould or something, you know.
Yeah. When we read Last Man, I want to see if we get any hints at who it was that hired Louis Gould, because I don't think we know too much.
Isn't it Rickman?
Is it Rickman? Oh, so Rickman would have to be tied up in all this.
Yeah.
And does that tie back to whatever happened with the Bin Laden
With the
raid?
Bin Laden raid.
I think Last Man's going to be important here. It's going to be so important.
Intriguing. All right. Well,
Yeah,
next
dude.
time we come back to you on the pod, it'll be the last man.
Good stuff.
Revisited. I like
Here we
these revisited
go.
series.
Bang time.
All right. Well, we need to thank our patrons, our special operators, Sherry F. and Jason C., our special agents, Ben, Daryl, Kevin, George, Matt, Don, Peggy, and Mark. And just a big shout out to all our patrons. Love all of you. Love hanging out with you guys. Love doing these book clubs. We got to pick our new book for the next quarter.
Oh yeah, when you left the call, you know what we discussed about that? For our next book club patron hangout, we're gonna go back to our wheelhouse, thrillers. We're gonna like stick straight to these kind of thrillers. And so everyone's gonna suggest one first book in a series of their choice. So like Mark was already saying, like, I'm gonna do Pike Logan, the Brad Taylor first book. Someone else is like the Gray Man book one, which we already covered, but that'd be fun to chat about.
Sure.
I said Daniel Silva, The Kill Artist.
Yeah, one of the colors.
I've always wanted to read that one. And so we're each going to
Lee
suggest a
Child, The
different
Killing Field.
Lee Child. Exactly. We're going to each select a first book in one of these, in this genre.
I guess because our first two, we went kind of off reservation,
We
so.
went off reservation. We tried to bring in a lot of classics. People were suggesting like really big classic books that people don't actually kind of like reading as popular fiction
The
or
Hunt
beach
for Red
reads.
October. I want to read The Hunt for Red October.
Same, yeah, I'd be down for that. But for our patron book club, it's like, come on, we all just want a banger of a beach read
Yeah,
type thriller.
you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you can subscribe, rate, and review using your favorite podcasting platform. Find us on thrillerpod.com or on Twitter and Instagram at thrillerpodcast. And as always, just let Nash be Nash.